Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. Good morning. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Feel better, Brian. Could Al-Qaeda be behind the deadly terrorist attacks in India? Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice raised that possibility in a news conference in New Delhi today. Rice is part of a diplomatic full-court press to ease tensions between India and Pakistan. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, is meeting with Pakistani officials in Islamabad today. Rice described the assault as distinct from others India has dealt with in recent years because it focused on high-profile targets, including those frequented by foreigners like the Taj Mahal Hotel. She says the attacks also appeared to be designed to send a message. She said, quote, whether there is a direct Al-Qaeda hand or not, this is clearly the kind of terror in which Al-Qaeda participates. The ongoing investigation and where it may lead has major repercussions for the relationship between India and Pakistan and for global relations, something we will explore with Somini Sengupta, a reporter for The New York Times who's been covering the story. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the latest news from Secretary of State Rice. Indian authorities have been much more likely to blame Lashkar-e-Taiba, the group fighting Indian rule in Kashmir. How does this change what you helped report today, that U.S. and Indian authorities are certain the terrorists had help from militants in Pakistan and that one of the main plotters named Yousef Muzamil is with LET?
Well, she, in response to a question, Secretary of State said there are some things that distinguish this attack, but she made it very clear that she wasn't concluding that Al-Qaeda was involved in this. She had a second interaction with reporters this evening, and she again very explicitly said it's too early to say exactly which organization is behind this. She's not suggesting that there's evidence that it's Al-Qaeda, but she does say that in the sophistication of this attack, in the kinds of targets that they chose. She said earlier in the day that could be a possibility. The Indians, for their part, say that, yes, the scale of this was somewhat different, but that several attacks in recent months have targeted very, very important symbolic targets, from the tourist city of Jaipur earlier this year to the national capital, New Delhi, and now Bombay, the financial capital.
So why talk about Al-Qaeda at all? Could Al-Qaeda have helped the LET do this? Does it have links to the LET?
The Secretary of State was asked a question about whether Al-Qaeda was involved, and she said, again, that there were certain distinguishing characteristics that she thought made this a distinct attack. The sophistication, the targets may suggest that Al-Qaeda, that she said this is the kind of thing that Al-Qaeda could participate in, but it's too early to say whether Al-Qaeda had a hand in it. No one knows at this point what kind of assistance and from where these 10 gunmen, what kind of assistance they operated with.
Newspaper reports are quoting Indian authorities as saying they know who masterminded the attacks, a man known to them called Yousef Muzamil. What do we know about him?
Well, police investigating this have told me that several names have come up in the interrogation of this sole suspect, of the sole gunman, including Muzamil. And he is a leader of Lashkar-e-Taiba, involved in attacks on India. Apparently, the gunman has also named others. Those we do not have any details on as yet. Perhaps we'll get some more information by tomorrow.
Do you have any details on the gunman, the lone man out of the 10 gunmen who conducted this 60-hour siege?
Indian police say that he's from a village in Punjab province in Pakistan, that he got his training in at least four different places in Pakistan, that he joined Lashkar-e-Taiba, that he was very specifically he was trained in a whole host of subjects, if you will, survival techniques, explosives, and he was given this particular assignment. Indian police continue to insist that this was a suicide mission, that there were only 10 guys involved in it. We still really don't know whether they had any local collaborators, whether there were any more than 10 people who came for this particular strike.
Now, that's what Indian authorities are saying about this gunman that they have in their custody. What has Pakistan said about him?
Pakistan's position so far has been we do not have any concrete evidence from the Indians linking any Pakistani citizens, and they have offered a joint investigation of this. The Indians have not responded to that. The Indians, for their part, have demanded that Pakistan turn over some 20 fugitives, both Indian and Pakistani citizens, that India has long wanted for various terror attacks and organized crime figures. Pakistan today said that, well, if we do have these people, if we knew that we had them, we would try them in our own court. So you have a bit of an impasse on that, which is troubling, because it then raises the question of what will India do if Pakistan continues to reject this this demand. India has not said what it will do. The foreign minister today, Pranab Mukherjee, in a press conference said that they were waiting for an official response from Pakistan with, before which they could not say what their next move would be.
And Somini, what does Pakistan get out of shielding these guys?
Well, remember, we don't know where these guys are. We haven't really heard directly from the Pakistani authorities about you know, whether they're in Pakistani territory, what they're willing to do with them. So all of that is still quite premature.
But certainly Hafiz Mohammed Saeed, the head of the LET, is in Lahore, correct?
The last information that we have suggests that he was in Lahore. Pakistani authorities insist that Lashkar-e-Taiba has been banned, but we do know that there are related organizations, very closely related organizations, according to some people, that continue to survive.
Technology played a big role in the terrorist attacks, cell phones, satellite phones. It appears the terrorists were much more technologically sophisticated than the Indian authorities. How can we fight terrorism globally if there's such a technological divide between, say, the New York City Police Department, for example, and Indian military commandos and Mumbai police?
These guys, the gunmen, apparently used a GPS navigational system to make their way from Karachi to Bombay, a trip that took about 3 days, according to the police. They were shown Google Earth maps of their targets in addition to video of their targets, so they knew apparently what they were going into, and they got off the boat, they took taxis to their locations, and did what they did. This all according to the Indian police, based on their interrogation of the suspect. They apparently do also have some satellite phone traffic, but that is all being analyzed right now. We don't really know exactly who these guys were calling, but we do know from witnesses and police who are on the scene that they were making a lot of calls. They were seen inside the Taj Hotel, for example, making several calls. And there was one victim that we spoke to who said they made a very long call, and they apparently relayed information about this victim to whoever they called, and ultimately spared him.
Wow.
Police say that they were constantly in touch with who they call their handlers. And today, the foreign minister, speaking with Secretary of State Rice, made it very clear that the Indians unequivocally think that all 10 came from Pakistan, and that their handlers, the people who masterminded it, were also from Pakistan.
Are you hearing from the people that you're talking to that it's in the United States' interests to fund and train the Indian military or the Mumbai police or other countries even to help them keep up technologically with terrorist groups?
We certainly haven't heard anything very specific along those lines, but the Americans have offered help in the investigation of this particular incident. There's a lot of defense cooperation that goes on and cooperation on anti-terrorist measures, but really nothing very specific along those lines.
Samini Sengupta with the New York Times. With me, I'm Amy Eddings, hosting for Brian Lehrer on The Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. Samini, the latest coming from Mumbai today is that police found explosives hidden in a bag in Mumbai's main train station, which they said was left over from last week's attacks. Can you tell us more about that?
Quite a worrying development. There was a bag found this afternoon that apparently, according to police, contained two unexploded bombs, weighing about 4 kilograms each, connected to a timer device. Why this was not found all this time is unclear, but the police say that this was abandoned by the two gunmen who started their killing spree here
almost last a full
Wednesday.
Week ago. Yeah, right.
A whole week ago. This is the city's busiest railway station. It has been open continuously since the day after the bombings. I have spent several hours in that station interviewing witnesses, and you know, thousands of people use this station every day.
Right.
So we still have a lot of unanswered questions about why this came to light, whether this came to light from the interrogation of the suspect, whether this was just found by, you know, sniffer dogs
right.
today, because there was a politician visit scheduled for later in the afternoon. There's still a bit of confusion about how this was discovered and why this was discovered today. In any event, it's exceptionally worrying, and it is yet another it's yet another signal of policing that really troubles a lot of Indian citizens. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of protests all over the country, both in Mumbai, in Delhi, and Bangalore today. The message of those protests by ordinary citizens has been, you know, why is law enforcement failing to protect ordinary citizens?
Tell me more about that. Certainly there was a huge outcry here in the United States after the 9/11 attacks of why didn't we know this? Why didn't we take action? Who knew about this? A lot of finger pointing. Is that what you're seeing going on among the general public in India?
There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of frustration about the failure to coordinate and share intelligence. There is a lot of anger at government officials and politicians who, you know, are perceived to be ignoring basic safety, basic public safety. I've heard a lot of frustration on the streets today about why do politicians travel with all these police and security guards? Why do national security guards, you know, a very elite force, why are they assigned to protect politicians? Why can't they respond to these things, the terrorist attacks, more quickly? The government earlier this week agreed to bolster this elite commando force, the National Security Guard, as it's known. It also said that it would strengthen air surveillance, air and maritime surveillance capacity. And the Prime Minister said in a speech on Sunday that he was prepared to overhaul the law enforcement system. This is clearly in response to the great public pressure on mm-hmm. this government to act.
Let's talk about some of the specifics of what we're now learning about what Indian authorities knew. You helped report today that the United States alerted Indian officials in mid-October about a possible terrorist attack or attacks in touristy areas in Mumbai. Indian authorities had also captured an Indian man, Fahim Ahmed Ansari, who had layouts of the Taj Mahal Hotel and Mumbai's main railway station on his person, as well as places that didn't end up being attacked. What is appearing to you to be the reason why Indian officials have failed to follow up with any action upon this information?
Well, there's a lot of unanswered questions about that, frankly. There's a lot of finger-pointing going on. There are several different intelligence agencies that are seen not to be talking to each other. So we really don't know exactly who informed whom, who failed to inform whom. There, we just see a lot of finger-pointing going on. But, yes, it is true that the Americans did give some warning to the Indians. How specific it was, how actionable it was, there's still a lot of questions about that.
Let's talk. Let's shift globally for a second. We know what the United States wants from Pakistan with its diplomatic efforts to ease tensions there. It wants help with Al Qaeda. What it wants from India is cooperation on nuclear trade. Last month, as the Times reported on its website today, Congress gave final approval to an agreement that allows the U.S. to sell nuclear fuel technology and reactors to India for peaceful use. And in exchange, India will open up 14 civilian nuclear facilities for international inspection. 8 other reactors, though, will still be off limits to outside scrutiny. The Times calls this a breakthrough agreement, the first of its kind in 30 years. Why is this deal so important, and how is this threatened by a possible war between Pakistan and India?
Well, the nuclear deal is quite separate. It's for civilian nuclear energy. India has a great need for energy. India has wanted to engage in global nuclear commerce for a long time, and because it's not a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, has been outside the ambit of nuclear commerce for all these years. The nuclear agreement with the United States paved the way for that. So now India can buy fuel, reactors, other kinds of technology, dual-use technology, not just from the United States, but from any other country. So it's quite separate and unrelated. This is not applied to any of its strategic nuclear reactors at all. Certainly, for the United States, cooperation with Pakistan has been important for the last several years, continues to be exceptionally important in order to bring stability to Afghanistan. And the United States is quite worried that any renewed tensions with India on Pakistan's eastern flank will undermine any efforts to fight the Taliban and restore stability on the western front. So this is really the big worry. In addition, I mean, ipso facto, any tensions between India and Pakistan, any prospect of a military confrontation between two nuclear powers is extremely worrying. Now, it has to be said that there are a lot of other options that are on the table. The military option seems, frankly, at this point, not very likely. We're not seeing any evidence of troop buildup, for example. We are seeing some restraint rhetorically being exercised. The Indian foreign minister did say yesterday that the peace process between the two countries that have gone on steadily but quite slowly over the last 5 years is very difficult to carry out under these circumstances. So I think we'll see in the next couple of days what India's reaction is going to be.
Samini Sengupta, a reporter for The New York Times, joining us from Mumbai, India. Nice work, Samini, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
This is Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Jonathan Tessini next.